is time for the I Love Ann Show continuation, and as promised, I have the one and only Congressman Trey Gowdy on the air. I got to play something here.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Yes, we have Congressman Trey Gowdy, and I tell you what, how is the rumble going up there in Washington?
I don't know. There are days I think I'm about to get a standing eight count because we're about to get knocked out, and then there are days I feel like we're doing okay. But it's a lot different from South Carolina, I can tell you that.
Well, I tell you what, boy, you know, it seems like there is not a lot of connubiality, shall we say, on the select committee. It seems like there's a rocky boat going on right now.
You noticed.
Yeah, I did.
My wife and mother noticed that also. So let me. I'll tell you what I told my wife last night. And my wife is the sweetest, kindest, most Christ-like human being I have ever met. And she does not understand attacking people, period, and certainly not for political expediency. Sure. So I had to explain to her that the nature of politics is such that your number one goal is to delegitimize your opponent. So what you saw this week was a concerted effort. If you watched the hearing, you saw most of my Democrat colleagues reading off a script. This was not stuff they came up with on their own. Their staff, the Democrat staffers, want to try to delegitimize the Republicans. So they hurl baseless, groundless allegations, trying to get our fellow citizens to say, well, this is just like every other committee in Congress. Republicans are fighting with Democrats. I'm not going to watch anymore. That's their goal. Because if people are watching and they see Republicans doing a fair job investigating an important topic, and God forbid Republicans come up with new information that no other committee's come up with, well, then the Democrats lose. So that's what they're trying to avoid.
Well, how are you feeling about the committee and how it's moving?
Well, it's slower than what any of us would want, and since I'm the chairman, I'm going to take responsibility for that. I believed initially that if we did things the right way, in other words, if we made legitimate requests, if we tried to work with the agencies, because there's some legitimate, I mean, like, I used to be a prosecutor. I do not want to adversely impact the Department of Justice's prosecution of Katala. And none of your listeners would want me to do that. So we engaged the agencies both behind the scenes and in telephone calls and sometimes in letters. And it just became clear to me at a certain point that while we were making little bitty steps of progress, the progress was not quick enough. I mean, one of the things we learned this week, Ann, was that our chief lawyer, our chief counsel, who was a three-star general, just got his security clearance to be able to read the documents that are in our committee room. After, what, 5 months?
Wow.
Just got his security clearance. So things like that have led me to abandon my Southern politeness and just become myself, which is a prosecutor that is going to be fair, but we're going to do it in a hurry.
Well, I do think, what are we coming up? It'll be a year, what, in May? Is that right?
It'll be a year in May, but I can promise you we're not going to wait till May. We are scheduling interviews, transcribed interviews with eyewitnesses, even as recently as yesterday. The pace has quickened now. And what did you see yesterday? The Democrats are now complaining that the pace is too quick. They went from complaining that it was too slow, which is disingenuous because they didn't want to participate at all, to now they're complaining that it's too quick. So, you know, fair-minded and observers and listeners are going to be able to conclude the Democrats are not interested in finding out what happened in Benghazi. So I had hoped that they would be a partner, but they're not. So we're going to, unfortunately, have to do it ourselves. We're still going to be fair. We're still going to pursue the facts. It's just we won't have their help in doing it.
No, there's been a lot of conversation that this is really a null and void, doesn't need to be done, because they came up with back, what was it, in November, that in November, December, that everything was okay the way it was done?
Yeah, I find that stunning, and because that was a report on one-third of Benghazi. The only thing the House Intelligence Committee looked at was the CIA. They didn't look at the White House. They didn't look at the State Department. They didn't look at the Department of Defense. They just looked at the CIA. And even then, even in that report, they made it clear, we are not commenting on the administration's response. We're not commenting on the State Department. We're just saying there was not an intelligence failure. Well, the mainstream media and the Democrats seized on that report and said, see, there's no more reason to look in Benghazi. What they're not seizing on, and this is really important, Ann, two of the people who were on that committee that issued that report are also on my committee. So why would they be staying on my committee if they didn't believe there was more work to be done?
Well, that's an interesting question, Trey. Have you asked them about that?
I'll tell you exactly why, because they agree there's more work to be done. Every single Republican who signed off on that report last fall that was supposed to clear the administration voted to reauthorize the Select Committee. So if you really think all the work has been done, why would you ever vote to reauthorize the Select Committee? And every single one of them did. What I would tell your listeners is this. Okay, let's assume 12 months from now we issue our report. And let's assume that in certain categories we reach the same conclusions that the House Intelligence Committee. Let's just assume that.
Okay.
So what? Is Benghazi not important enough to let two different people look at it? Or are we just going to be satisfied if one group does it? I mean, what's the harm in having, particularly since you have four dead Americans, what's the harm in two groups looking at something? What I think is going to happen is you're going to find, because we are going to be insistent on all of the information, we are going to find facts that the previous committees never found. So I believe we will find new information. But even if we don't, are four murdered Americans not worthy of at least two people looking at something instead of one?
No, I couldn't agree with you more on that, Trey. I think that this is something, but it's been such a process. And, you know, I think that's why it is so frustrating as voters down here to be looking at this and waiting and waiting. You know, I heard Mike Rogers was on Jim Bohannon's show the other night, and they asked him, do you miss Congress? And he goes, I don't miss the circus. I miss some of the people. And then he went on to say that though Congress is really a microcosm of the United States, we can't agree on anything, and yet we keep trying to go through the process.
Well, I'll say this about Mike. The last conversation I had with Mike before he left Congress, he was incredibly clear to me. And this is the former chairman of the House Intel Committee that all the Democrats love to cite.
Right.
Mike was very clear with me. He said, Trey, you need to keep going. Keep looking, keep digging, keep going. So this is the guy who chaired the report that they hold up as the end-all, be-all. And he's looking me in the eyes and saying, you need to keep going. Mike is right. There are some good people in Congress, but the process is broken, and the process is broken for this reason. And in all of our everyday lives, if you were to assign me and five of your listeners to a project, our goal would be to solve whatever problem you put in front of us.
Sure.
That's not the goal in Washington. Look what we heard just this week. Nancy Pelosi, and this is not a reflection of Hillary Clinton, this is a reflection on Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi believes her very best chance at retaking the House is for Hillary Clinton to become the president. And that's what all of Washington is about holding the gavel in your hand, being in a position of majority, being the committee chairman. Instead of Jason Chaffetz being the chairman of oversight, they want it to be Elijah Cummings. Instead of Bob Goodlatte being the chairman of judiciary, they want it to be John Conyers. It is about winning. That is how you get a 7% public approval rating, and that is how you have so many people switching off of politics and saying, I'm just not going to watch anymore.
Yeah, it is just such a shame that that is where it's at. And then that goes on to, in fact, we're going to have Mick Mulvaney on after you here this morning. I got a trifecta. Tomorrow I've got Jeff on tomorrow. So, but
that's a lot of pain for your listeners to have to endure.
I think you might be right. But this thing about term limits and that the fact that you can't even get to term limits because everybody is looking at what the gavel they can hold. So that's a very big issue.
There, you know, Mickey has a bill on term limits. I'm sure I'm on that bill. So there are a number of ways to have term limits. One is for your listeners to impose them themselves.
By voting?
Absolutely.
Yeah, there you go.
Now I will say this, and this will probably be controversial and probably get me in trouble, and my communications director's probably got her heart in her throat right now, but there are people in Congress, and I'll give you a name. I think Paul Ryan is a uniquely gifted legislator.
Okay.
So I would hate for somebody like Paul Ryan to only be in government for 6 years. I would hate that.
Okay.
By the same token, people like me and like most of my colleagues are eminently replaceable. There are 1,000 people in my district that could do the job I do, and probably better. So there are plenty of people who could participate. But I don't know that term limits is going to get you anything other than that last term that you're serving in the House, that third term.
Right.
Maybe you would act differently then because you weren't coming back. But why would you act differently the first two terms? Because your same goal would be there, which is to get reelected, right?
It would seem, but you can look right at what our president is doing, and you know, he seems to be freed from the fact that he's not going to have to be reelected.
Right, and he's free to do bad things.
Right.
He has been liberated to do really bad things.
Yeah.
There's one other form of term limits, which is imposing them on yourself.
Right.
I mean, how often in politics do women or men say, you know what? I appreciate the fact that you've allowed me to serve. It's been a tremendous honor. Nobody's kicking me out. Nobody's running me out of town. I'm just going to go back to another line of work. All of our forefathers did that. But how often do you see it now? What you see now is you have to beat them, or scandal will run them out of office, or getting beat will run them out of office. But rarely do you see people who aren't being pushed out the window, jump out the window.
Yeah, you know, I think sometimes the only ones that seem to go are the ones that you wish would stay, like Mike Rogers.
Well, and I can tell you, I'm not going to divulge any private conversations, but there are people that, and that you like very much,
mm-hmm.
That are growing really tired, and they are wondering whether or not this is the most efficient use of their time. You know, I'm not talking about myself, but I'm married to a school teacher. There's never a day in her life where she wonders whether or not she's making a difference. Never a day.
Yeah.
But I've got colleagues in the House who are incredibly talented people, people that you would want to be in positions of responsibility. And because of the toxic nature, I mean, look this week. I mean, I'm a big boy. I have three sisters. There's nothing Democrats can say to me that I haven't already heard. But in 16 years of being a prosecutor, I was never accused of what Democrats accused me of doing this week. Never. Not even in death penalty cases. So if you're a normal, average, everyday person, why would you subject yourself to that?
Well, is it because truth, justice, in the American way, Superman?
Well, you can seek truth, justice, in the American way in lots of ways.
Yeah.
And, you know, when young people say, I want to go into politics to change the world, I say, well, if you want to change the world, you either need to teach or you need to start a sitcom, because both of those things have more influence over our culture than politics.
Mm, well, there's a good statement for you. So are you going to become a comedian?
I'm going to let Mulvaney do that, although he's not particularly funny. He has the interest but not the ability. How's that?
I'll be sure to tell him that. Okay. All right. Well, let me ask you a few other questions. You know, they've Fast and Furious, you know, has that totally died?
Oh, no.
Oh, no?
In fact, I got an email this week from Brian Terry's brother. Brian Terry, of course, being the border agent who was killed. We have a new chairman in oversight, Jason Chaffetz from Utah. Wonderful,
right.
Wonderful person. He's already reissued the subpoenas with respect to Fast and Furious. I hope pretty soon we're going to have a new attorney general. I think Ms. Lynch is probably going to be approved by the Senate from what I read. Chuck Grassley is the new Senate judiciary chairperson. He has been as involved in Fast and Furious as any member of Congress on in either branch. Mm-hmm. Chuck Grassley from Iowa has been a leader on Fast and Furious, and he now has the gavel in his hand. Where we are is where we often find ourselves. The executive branch will not give us the information we've requested. We've had to go to court. Eric Holder asserted executive privilege over some pretty frivolous things, including emails back and forth between he and his wife, which is, from a legal standpoint, absurd that you would assert executive privilege. But the moral of the story for all of us is, if you really want to change the direction of the country, you have to have the executive branch. You have to have the presidency. You can have the House and the Senate, but who picks the AG? Who decides whether or not to assert executive privilege? Who determines foreign policy? The president. So if you really want to change the country, you have to have the executive branch. And we have a chance coming up in 2 years.
And do you think the American public will go there, though? That's my question, you know, because there's all this back and forth, and now I understand it's a done deal. The Democrats, they're putting up Hillary.
Well, you know what? It depends. And, I mean, I was in Houston last weekend, and I have no idea the politics of any of the people, because I was speaking at a church, and it really wasn't a political talk. But it depends on whether or not people, in the quietness of their own soul, feel like we're headed in the right direction as a country, and whether or not we think that maybe we can do just a little bit better than we've done for the last 6 or 7 years. I think most people believe that we're not better off than we were before this experiment with President Obama started. So really, you know, hardcore Democrats, people who support Elizabeth Warren, people from Venus, other people you're probably not going to be able to have a conversation with.
Right.
But you know, average everyday Americans who just want to, you know, raise their family and provide for their family and have, you know, a little better life for the next generation than theirs, I think that they would look in the mirror and say, you know what, we can do better. And we gave a chance to the Democrats to run the White House, and we're not better off. So why not give a chance to, you know, whoever you like, whether it's Scott Walker, whether it's Marco Rubio, whether it's Ted Cruz, whoever you like. But we got to be careful how we treat each other during the nomination process, or we're gonna commit, you know, internecine fratricide.
That doesn't sound good.
It's bad. I think it's redundant, but it's also bad.
Bad. You know, I was curious to ask you that you, of course, Hillary has said she's going to come forth and testify. What do you think? Are you surprised at all?
I am not surprised that she was willing to do it. I've really, in fairness to her, she's never indicated otherwise. Some of my Democrat colleagues have indicated otherwise, and they can't, depending on which day it is whether or not they believe she ought to come. But she's never said she would not come, and I don't want to impact 2016 politics. That's not what I was asked to do.
Mm-hmm.
By the same token, you can't bring a former Secretary of State back and forth a half dozen times.
Excellent.
Your listeners and my fellow citizens would say, get your act together, Gowdy. You got one chance. Quit bringing people back and forth. So if you have just one chance to examine someone, you want to do a good job, right?
Correct.
Which means I need the emails, and I need the cables, and I need the documents. Because what would be horrible would be for me to have a chance to question her, and then some emails or documents or cables be released later. And maybe it's something she wants to speak to, or maybe it's something I want to ask her about. Well, that opportunity is passed because I decided to bring her before I had all the information. You only get one crack in a courtroom. You get one crack at a witness. The judge is not going to let you bring a witness back multiple times.
Yeah.
So prepare and be ready to do it that one time. That's all I'm asking of the State Department. Give me the documents so I can have a constructive conversation with a former Secretary of State, and we can do it one time.
Are you going to get them?
Well, we're not going to be able to bring her until they do it, and to the extent that she has any influence with this administration on providing us what we want, if she really wants to come sooner rather than later, then she needs to help us. She needs to pick up the phone and call the president and say, Mr. President, there's nothing in those documents that I need hidden or kept from the American people. Give the Congress what they have legitimately asked for, and let's get this over with. That's up to her. I don't know whether she's having those conversations or not.
Now, what about this Loretta Lynch? What do you feel about her taking the reins of Attorney General?
Yeah, to the good side, she's a former federal prosecutor. She had a really good reputation. To the bad side, this president seems to like attorney generals that are political and not independent. And my idea of the perfect attorney general is someone who can walk into the Oval Office and say, Mr. President, you can have my resignation or you can have my independent justice, but I don't work for you. I work for a blindfolded woman that holds a set of scales. That is the perfect AG. Whether or not she is willing to look the most powerful person in the world in the eyes and say, I'm going to do what's right and not what you're asking me to do, I think Eric Holder is among the most political attorney generals that this country has ever had. And I don't think politics and justice mix very well.
So what do you think? It's the jury's still out on this one?
I don't think we know enough. I mean, I think she's going to be approved. I have not talked to Senator Scott or Senator Graham. I know Senator Graham's on judiciary. Senator Scott is not. I have not talked to them. I think the consensus is she's going to be better than Eric Holder. But is she going to be what I just described? We don't know. What we do know is if you want to start picking your own attorney general, you better start figuring out how to win national elections.
There you go. Well, you know, it seems to always come back to that one thing, doesn't it, Trey?
I know that I sound like a broken record, but we've won one out of the last six popular votes for president. I say we Republicans. I don't know the politics of all of your listeners, but if you're a Republican, you've won one out of the last six popular votes. So if you want to start controlling foreign policy, if you're concerned about ISIS, if you want Supreme Court justices that are less activist, if you want an attorney general that is more independent, you better figure out how to win national races.
This brings me to my very last question today here with you, Trey. I hear that your name is being batted around about being vice president.
Vice president of what?
The United States of America.
Oh, I've never heard that. I heard vice president of my homeowners association. I did hear that last week, but there's
right.
A word in the Bible called discernment, and I call it self-awareness. You have to know what you're good at.
Yes.
I was telling one of my friends the other day, there's a reason I don't work on my children's teeth when they have cavities. There's a reason that I don't fix my wife's car when it breaks down, because I wouldn't be good at either one of those. I was an okay prosecutor. I would love to be back in a job where justice and facts were rewarded.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'll have a really good vice presidential candidate, but it won't be the guy you're talking to.
How about Attorney General?
I would love to be in a job where facts and justice are rewarded and where independence, the idea of working for a blindfolded woman holding a set of scales, she would be the best boss I ever had.
Then I take that as maybe a yes.
But that requires a lot of things. And frankly, if one of my friends were elected president and they came to me, I would say, tell me who else is a candidate. Because, you know, I mean, think back to the Senate vacancy we had where there were a list of names floated when Senator DeMint left. And Governor Haley had it down to four or five names. Everyone who asked me, are you willing to do it? My response was always the same. Why would you pick me? You've got Tim Scott. Tim Scott would be 1,000 times better than me. And he is, and he has been. So if there's somebody better qualified to be the AG, that's who I want for our country. And there, you know, there are plenty of really, really, really good prosecutors in this country. I would be satisfied with any job that rewards fairness, justice, and independence. And but you got to win before we can even have that conversation.
Okay. Well, I think we'll be having lots more conversations before then. Congressman Trey Gowdy, you know I always appreciate you coming on the show, and keep up the good fight.
Will you make sure and tell Mick I did not ask about him?
Okay. I will do that.
All right. Hey, God bless you, Ann. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.